You could spend the weekend doing the same old whatever, or you could conquer the weekend in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.
Hey, everybody, this is Richard Deitch, and welcome to the Sports Media Podcast. My producers are Patrick Antonetti and Sean Cherry. This week, three guests, three excellent guests. First segment is the ESPN and YES Network broadcaster Ryan Rucco, who calls NBA games for ESPN, Yankees and Nets games for the YES Network, and was just named ESPN's lead play-by-play commentator for women's college basketball. Ryan, of course, also does the WNBA, but he now takes over for Adam Amin and has the women's Final Four. So a really good assignment for him. I know his colleagues Rebecca Lobo and Holly Rowe really like him and advocated for him. So he discusses getting that new assignment, as well as calling the NBA and what he thinks will happen with the Nets this year, his podcast that he does with CeCe Sabathia, and then some other broadcasting stuff. So Ryan Rucco to start. He is followed by two of my colleagues at The Athletic, Lindsay Adler and Olivia Witherite. They discussed the impact of Kim Ng becoming the first female general manager in Major League Baseball. Both Lindsay and Olivia wrote excellent pieces on this. Lindsay's piece, sort of what it means for women in baseball and what it means for women like her who work in baseball on a day-to-day basis like Kim Ng does. And then Olivia wrote a piece about representation and being Korean-American and what it meant to Olivia to see Kim Ng getting this high-profile job in baseball. And that's where our discussion leads to, talking about being females working in sports, in Lindsay's case being a female on the Yankees beat, where representation might be heading. Olivia talks about the skills needed to become a social media lead in sports, and I think you'll enjoy that that conversation. So three guests, Ryan Rucco, Lindsay Adler, and Olivia Witherite, coming up on the Sports Media Podcast. All right, as I said at the top, Ryan Rucco is both an ESPN and YES Network broadcaster. You've seen him on ESPN's NBA coverage. You've seen him on ESPN's WNBA coverage. If you happen to live in the New York area or you have League Pass or whatever, you've seen him on Nets games and Yankees games. He's here for that, but the real news hook for Ryan is he was recently named as ESPN's lead play-by-play commentator for women's college basketball. That means he follows Adam Amin calling the women's Final Four and women's NCAA championship, knock on wood that happens. And Ryan Rucco joins me today on the Sports Media Podcast. Ryan, I actually think I forgot your podcast with CeCe Sabathia as well. Feel free to hype. I'll give you 30 seconds if you want to hype that very quickly.
Why not? Although that intro was lovely anyway, Richard. But yeah, sure. R2C2 is my podcast with CeCe Sabathia. You could follow us on Spotify or wherever you get your podcasts. We're part of the Ringer Podcast Network. And we have a great time, discussing sports, entertainment, and sharing conversations with some of the biggest names in both of those fields. So go ahead. Follow it, man.
Ryan, so you've done the WNBA, and so I think a lot of women's basketball fans know your work from there with Rebecca Lobo and Kara Lawson Pryor, et cetera. Now you have the assignment of being the lead for the women's college basketball coverage on ESPN, which obviously includes the women's Final Four. Take my audience just through the you're a busy guy. You have a lot of dates in your contracts. But but this is clearly something you wanted. So how does something like this come about? How do you get women's college basketball at ESPN?
Yeah, so first and foremost, I do just want to say this so I don't forget, Richard. I appreciate what an advocate you have been for so many years and continue to be for the women's game. I know that does not go unnoticed in these circles. And so I appreciate the spotlight you always put both on the WNBA and on women's college. For me, I've gotten so, I've just absolutely fallen in love with the WNBA over the last 8 years doing it with Rebecca and Holly. And, you know, we all like to feel like we have a special bond and special chemistry. And I think, it's been well received. We obviously now have a lot of reps together, including in different styles of broadcasting, whether it's, you know, your typical remotes on site, or it's Remy Pros, which is where the announced team's on site, but production is back in Bristol or Charlotte or wherever your studios might be, or just broadcasting games from studio like Rebecca and I had to do throughout the WNBA. And so I think the ingrained chemistry we have and the genuine friendships, you know, Rebecca, Holly, and I are ridiculously close friends. And on the WNBA side of things, we're also incredibly close with LaChyna Robinson, who we work with as well. And you know, I think that friendship breeds good on-air chemistry, and so do the reps. And so, you know, we've become so familiar with each other. We love broadcasting together. And so when Adam got the gig at Fox, as well as with the Bulls, and well-deserved, he's, as you know, he's as good a guy as he is talented. And that left a vacancy. I think Rebecca and Holly both kind of reached out to Pat Lowry, who's the coordinating producer for WNBA, excuse me, for women's college basketball. And maybe they reached out otherwise. I don't know if they reached out to Mike Schiffman as well and just kind of said, like, hey, if Ryan could work it with his schedule, you know, we'd love to have him there. We know he'd be great. We all worked so well together. We all love the women's game. You know, after they did that, they had kind of given me a heads up and just said, hey, we don't know if you can make it work with your schedule, but we think it'd be so fun. We'd love to do it. And I was like, yeah, if I could make it work, sure. And, you know, I don't know exactly when it was, but some time ago, Mike Schiffman had a call with me and just said, hey, we'd love for you to do this. You know, first of all, do you have interest? And can you make it work with your other existing responsibilities? And we actually like went through comping last year's game schedule to how it would have lined up with both my NBA on ESPN responsibilities as well as my Nets on Yes responsibilities. And there really weren't many conflicts at all, because the women's college games in the regular season that we do, and it's not that many for our crew, but they're on Mondays and Thursdays. And I rarely ever have a Nets on Yes game on a Monday or Thursday. My games are typically Fridays, Saturdays, and Sundays when I'm filling in for Ian as he does his CBS assignments. And even though it ends up totaling about, you know, 25 to 30 Nets games for me, they always, with the exception of a couple weeks throughout the year, fall on those days. So really wasn't much of a conflict. I'd say the only time there could be a little juggling is when we get to the Sweet 16 and Elite Eight. But the good thing is I think everybody is, you know, willing to, you know, be flexible and knows how much I care about keeping both parties happy. So so it actually worked out, and it gives me a chance to work with my good friends and get to call another championship and get to tell a different chapter of these women's stories. So I'm pumped about it.
Ryan, what have they told you so far about traveling to any site?
Yeah, so it's actually, you know what I've realized, Richard, is like, there's like, when you're usually making a schedule, right? Typically, when we're making announced schedules, you have this feeling like somebody else knows exactly what's happening and they just haven't been able to tell you yet, right? And so if you're someone like me who's kind of juggling two networks, you might try and get a jump on, okay, who can I contact that might have an inkling as to what my schedule is, but they just haven't released it yet, so I can get some intel and try and balance this. Well, in this case, there really isn't that person who knows things that just hasn't shared them yet. Everything is so fluid, and we all are required to be so nimble because of, you know, the incredible circumstances that our country and our world is dealing with. So as of now, I truly don't know how we are going to approach this. I have heard that we will have perhaps some games on site, some games from studio, some games from at home. Our incredible engineers at ESPN have come up with a state-of-the-art at-home recording kit for play-by-play that seems to be working well in the sports that are using it right now. College football is using it. Baseball has used it as well. And I think that it's sort of going to be a hybrid of how we do these games. You know, I would imagine for the NCAA tournament, you know, knock on wood, it happens, as you said at the top of the interview. I mean, hopefully you know, that would be on site. But everything else, I think, is going to be sort of dependent on the circumstances with the virus and also our access to studios and the other technology. The good thing is I know Rebecca and I are unbelievably comfortable with calling games from studio. So if that's our model for the regular season, we feel great about that. And then we can, you know, readjust as we, you know, get towards conference tournaments and the NCAA tournament. But the first couple games we're going to do, Richard, on the Sunday after Thanksgiving and then the Friday after that are going to be from Mohegan Sun. So Rebecca and I will do those games from site. We'll get in the day before. We'll have to test, quarantine in our rooms till we get the results, as well as have had an at-home test a couple days prior. So those will be on site, and that's easy access for both of us, Rebecca driving from Connecticut and me driving from New York City.
Ryan, have you given that you have called NBA games for multiple outlets, and you've called the WNBA, obviously, for ESPN. I'm curious about this, and maybe the answer is there is no difference, which would actually be a cool answer, but I'll ask it anyway. When you get feedback from producers or when you get feedback from coordinating producers, network executives, et cetera, is the feedback the same for both women's basketball and the NBA, or is the feedback different? And if it's different, how so?
You know, that's interesting. I think the feedback from executives is very much the same. You know, Tim Corrigan, who is our outstanding coordinating producer for NBA on ESPN and also oversees the WNBA, as well as, you know, actually produces the NBA Finals, he will write us up like the same sort of in-depth feedback for the WNBA Finals as if, you know, as he would if he listens to a specific NBA game. And he touches base with us the same way for WNBA as he does for NBA. I think that, you know, there's certainly an added level of investment, if you will, in trying to be creative for the WNBA in its promotion because we know, hey, you know, there's a lot of growth that can happen with that sport. And so I think we see a high level of engagement from executives who want to see the game grow and who know it should. Like Carol Stiff, who's done an unbelievable job advancing women's sports in her time at ESPN. She will be, you know, very hands-on and collaborative with us asking, okay, how do we do this? You know? And so I think that, I mean, I feel like ESPN really does a good job of its top executives paying a lot of attention to women's sports and investing in them and giving us feedback on them. Stephanie Drewley, who's one of our top executives, I know she wrote, you know, us beautiful handwritten notes just applauding our coverage at the end of the WNBA season. So it feels similar. The one area I would say it's different, Richard, is sometimes when we hear back from league executives. You know, you might, when I'm talking to people around NBA circles, I may get, you know, feedback from people saying like, oh, you know, you do such a good job on the games, or we love, you know, hearing this crew or whatever it might be, or, you know, you guys make us laugh. Or if I'm talking with the Nets coaches, you know, and they hear me doing an ESPN game, right? Then maybe, oh, we love listening to you guys that, you know, we like hearing how informed your ESPN broadcasts are, or we love you guys on Nets on Yes, you know, make us laugh. But the interesting thing that Rebecca, Holly, LaChina, and I get from WNBA team personnel is they will say, thank you so much for the energy you put into the broadcast and the investment you make in the broadcast and how much passion you bring to the airwaves because it helps, you know, the credibility of our sport. And that's something that I think applies more to sports that don't have as large an audience, right, or as ingrained a fan base. And what I think is really cool about that from a WNBA standpoint is it fosters a really collaborative atmosphere where we all feel like we're working together to have a tangible impact on growing a sport that we know is worthy of a massive audience. And so that is, I guess, one difference I would sense between, you know, WNBA and NBA.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/recommend today.
All right, a couple more here. Roughly, how many Brooklyn Nets telecasts do you do a year for YES?
Around 25 to 30.
Okay. All right, so that's pretty significant. You get a real feel for the team. What is it like in your position to call a team, playoff team last year, a lot of fun, those guys compete, but then this year has the potential to be like anything from like if it all works, maybe the NBA Finals. If none of it works, it's like the biggest docudrama since like, you know, Dynasty in Dallas. It's like, do you have a little bit of an extra bit of like juice in your, I'm not really asking a great question, but like, you know, are you sort of a little bit more, you cover the NBA, so it's obviously a great job, but are like you more charged because this year Kevin Durant is in town, Kyrie Irving's in town, there's going to be national focus on the Nets where there hasn't been in the last couple of years. So what's it like in someone like in your position or Ian Eagle's position who, you know, you're calling these guys, you're around these guys every day?
Man, I mean, of course it's more exciting. Like, I mean, when you're calling 19 win seasons and 20 win seasons and, you know, 23 win seasons, and you're just, it's, I don't think it's as difficult in a sport like basketball compared to baseball when you have a bad team, right? Because the action sort of sustains itself when you're calling the game. But, you know, like, I can't imagine being, you know, doing play-by-play day in and day out for a 100 loss baseball team, because there's only about 15 minutes of play-by-play action throughout a three-hour baseball game. So it's like, what are you even talking about with such an awful team, right? Well, with basketball, at least you're able to fill the airwaves. But, man, when you're in some of those games where you're down 25 midway through the third quarter and the team is 30 games under 500, like, yeah, like it's not the peak of the profession. And so to have attention around the team and to have stardom and to have greatness to watch. I mean, one of the things I think is just amazing about calling basketball is, you know, I mean, who knows if this will be the case this year, but normally you're sitting courtside watching these unbelievable individual talents and they ball out every single day, right? Like, one of the reasons, you know, a courtside seat is a worthy investment if you're trying to splurge on a sporting event is because, you know, when you go to that game, LeBron's going to score 20 and have 10 boards, right? Like, he's going to. You just know it. It's not, you know, you could go see Gerrit Cole and he might give up 6 runs in 3 innings that day. That's the nature of baseball, right? Or Ken Griffey could go 0 for 5 or 3 strikeouts. In basketball, I mean, these people, they ball out basically every single day, the true stars. And so I can't wait for that to, and you never know what they could do. Like, every time Ian or I get ready to call a game, there's a chance we're going to be calling a 50-point performance from Kyrie or Kevin Durant. And you think about where this team was just, you know, 4 years ago, and it's hard to kind of get back in that mindset because things have gotten so much better. But when Sean Marks took this over, I was like, well, if they could be a contender in 6 years, that would be a miracle. Instead, you know, this dude did it in half the time. So, I mean, Richard, it makes our job so much better having these stars now and having a real chance to compete and just having the attention and excitement around the team.
You've seen what's happened in the Eastern Conference. Milwaukee made a move, obviously, with Drew Holiday. Gordon Hayward leaves the Celtics. Raptors lost a couple of guys. Philadelphia made some changes. You know, the whole conference, you know, the Heat are still the Heat. The whole conference feels like from top to bottom, it's a little bit stronger because I think some of the bottom teams have gotten better. If you had to guess today, presuming that Durant and Kyrie stay healthy, what do you expect from the Nets?
I think that they are absolutely finals contenders. I think one thing that helps them as well is, you know, I think they have a GM who has shown incredible creativity. So if there are things that they need throughout the season to augment an otherwise championship caliber core, I think, one, they have the assets to be able to do that, and two, you know, they have the GM who I think is creative enough to do that. So I think I look at them as, if they're not, maybe we want to seed Eastern Conference favorites to Miami because, hey, they just went to the finals. And also, I think they've made some really, even if they're under the radar, shrewd moves to supplement what was already an incredibly strong roster. And so Miami, I'd say, you know, you put as the favorites because of what they just did. Milwaukee, just behind them. I love the moves Milwaukee's made this offseason. And then I would put Brooklyn right there. And at the end of the day, Kevin Durant looks like Kevin Durant, and you are probably going into the Eastern Conference playoffs, and even if you're looking at Miami and Milwaukee and saying, oh, they had slightly better regular seasons, if you're the Nets, you'd be saying, yeah, but we're putting the best player on the floor. Kevin Durant, if he's healthy, will be the best player in the Eastern Conference. So I think they absolutely should have, you know, no doubt about being a real contender to win the East. And as long as Durant and Kyrie stay healthy, I think that they will be a serious finals contender.
Last one for me is you do your podcast with CeCe Sabathia, and you know you're part of a sort of an interesting podcast grouping to me, in that an athlete is working with a broadcaster, or an athlete is, you know, is working with a non-athlete on a podcast, and it seems to have really worked well with you and CeCe. And I wonder, and this is not necessarily a new concept, but I do feel like it's a concept that certainly can continue. And I wonder, heading forward, do you see more of this? You see more former athletes, retired athletes, sort of partnering with traditional broadcasters in a podcast to get that dynamic? Or, and maybe we will see that, but we also see, as you know, Ryan, a lot of former athletes or former coaches just do their own podcast. They don't need a quote-unquote traditional broadcaster. But I think that's an interesting dynamic. I think you and CeCe have a good chemistry. You guys come from different places. And to me, that makes for an interesting show. So I wonder, from your perspective, you know, the replication of that seems to me that could be a pretty good formula heading forward for people.
Yeah, man. I appreciate that, and I agree. I think that one thing that really helped CeCe and me is we had organically developed a relationship. And so it wasn't necessarily a case of like, okay, like, you know, I want to do a podcast, who's an athlete I think would be good, and picking him. Or CeCe, like, oh, I want to do a podcast, who's a host like that I, you know, I can, you know, just deal with or, you know, get along with enough. It was genuinely, you know, years of us talking to each other about like, we should do something together someday. And so there was a real organic relationship and even a thought process behind it for years before it actually came to fruition. But I do think it should happen more, Richard, and I think it can. I think that, you know, a lot of times home broadcasters for teams do develop, you know, genuine relationships with players on the team. And maybe they're friendships, maybe they're acquaintances, maybe they're just mutual respect, but they're enough of a foundation that you could definitely have a really good podcast. And then that relationship develops even more once you start doing it, right? And so for CeCe, I know one of the things CeCe always jokes about is he'll listen to certain podcasts and be like, man, they need a host, because they need a host. And he likes that, you know, I can handle all the sort of X's and O's of things, right? And he doesn't have to worry about segueing or, you know, handling reads or whatever it might be, right? And I'm able to, you know, get us through topics. But he is, for me, the number one person I've ever seen in sports when it comes to disarming a guest. I have never seen somebody better at disarming a guest than CeCe Sabathia, for a couple reasons. One, he's obviously incredibly credentialed. Two, he is unbelievably authentic. I don't care who you are. CeCe isn't going to act like he's something other than who he is, or share, you know, an opinion that's not true to who he is because of who he's talking to. He has no problem being his genuine self. And I think people respect that, whoever they are, you know, whether it's, you know, Alex Rodriguez, or it's DeAndre Jordan, or, you know, take your pick, or it's Gerrit Cole. you know, they respect that CeCe is going to be his genuine self. And you know, then we do have some weird common interests. Like, we're both diehard Star Wars and Harry Potter fans. And CeCe always jokes about that, too. He's like, you know, we come from, it's hilarious because we come from very different backgrounds, but we're both into the same nerdy stuff. And I'm like, yeah, man, we both also love orcas, which is a random one, Richard, but we do. I think that those relationships do exist. And I think it's helpful because, you know, there's a certain skill set that comes with the reps of being a broadcaster, right? That allows you to smoothly transition or at least have some experience teeing up subjects and you know, kind of, this person said this, this guest said this, we got to get back to that at some point, and just knowing how to do that, right? And then there is a comfort that the guest feels from having somebody like CeCe that they would never feel with just having me, right? Or just having the broadcaster. And then there's an experience factor, too. CeCe's had experiences that I've never had and never will have that he can relate to with the guests. And then also, you know, the skill set broadcast-wise develops with reps. Like, CeCe does all these nuanced broadcasty things now, in addition to his natural skill set and the way he naturally gets along with guests. So I think CeCe is a unique entity in his personality and how intelligent he is, how welcoming he is, how authentic he is, and how credentialed he is. But I think when you can find that kind of person, that athlete, and pair them with somebody who they have a genuine respect for, and that's one thing I get. CeCe has always, like, he always has given me props and praises, and I think it's helped me in this relationship as well with the podcast and knowing that I have his respect, and it helps me to be my best self. And there are other athletes who have that relationship with broadcasters, you know, and I think when you can find those, you could definitely, you know, come up with a great podcast. I'm telling you right now, Zach Britton would do an unbelievable podcast, and he has great relationships with broadcasters. Like, that's an athlete I think of right away who I know would be incredible. And so I think those relationships, that's obviously one that comes to top of mind, but I think they're out there, man. So yeah, I think it can work.
I appreciate that. Ryan Rucco is an ESPN and Yes Network broadcaster. You see him on ESPN's NBA coverage, ESPN's WNBA coverage, the Yes Network's Nets and Yankees coverage. And he was recently named to serve as ESPN's lead play-by-play commentator for women's college basketball alongside Rebecca Lobo and Holly Rowe. And I thank Ryan Rucco for his time. Ryan, best of luck with all this, and thanks for joining me today on the Sports Media Podcast.
Thank you for having me, Richard. I really appreciate it, man.
Selling a little or a lot? Shopify helps you do your thing, however you cha-ching. Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage, to the first real-life store stage, all the way to the did we just hit a million orders stage. Shopify is here to help you grow. Whether you're selling scented soap or offering outdoor outfits, Shopify helps you sell everywhere. From their all-in-one e-commerce platform to their in-person POS system, wherever and whatever you're selling, Shopify is got you covered. Shopify helps you turn browsers into buyers with the internet's best converting checkout. 15% better on average compared to other leading commerce platforms. And sell more with less effort thanks to Shopify Magic, your AI-powered all-star. Shopify powers 10% of all e-commerce in the US. And Shopify is the global force behind Allbirds, Rothy's, and Brooklinen, and millions of other entrepreneurs of every size across 175 countries. Plus, Shopify's award-winning 24/7 help is there to support your success every step of the way. Because businesses that grow, grow with Shopify. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/odysseypodcast, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/odysseypodcast now to grow your business, no matter what stage you're in. shopify.com/odysseypodcast.
As I said at the top, Lindsay Adler and Olivia Witherite, if I blew your name, Olivia, just correct me and call me an idiot. But they are two of my colleagues at The Athletic, incredibly smart and great at what they do. Lindsay covers the Yankees on a day-to-day basis. If you're a Yankee fan or a baseball fan, you probably have read her work. Olivia is the social media lead for The Athletic, and The Athletic social media is like on point and ridiculously good. So for those of you in the industry who are into social media and sort of into how those strategies exist, Olivia is one of the point people at The Athletic, and I'm pleased to be joined by both of them today. They join me together. Lindsay, Olivia, thanks for joining me today on the Sports Media Podcast.
Yeah, thanks for having us.
All right, Lindsay, I'm going to start with you. And you wrote a column on what Kim Ng becoming the general manager of the Miami Marlins means for women in baseball. And I was glad to see that it sort of got some steam, and maybe going viral is a little too strong, like in the world that we live in, but like in our little circles, it did go viral. And so many people in the industry and the business read it. And it was first person. I know that's not something you always love to do, but I appreciate it. You put yourself out there and you like sort of provided something that's really important. And that's like a perspective that, you know, a white male dude like myself, like, doesn't think about all the time. And like sort of it, what does this hire mean for women in baseball? And does it change sort of the paradigm when, you know, for more women to get management jobs, for more women to get baseball writing jobs? So go as long as you want here and just sort of take me through your thought process of one, why you decided to write the piece, and two, just writ large, like what does Kim Ng's hiring mean beyond Kim Ng?
I wrote the piece because Ken Rosenthal called me at a time when I am not usually awake, which is before 9 a.m., and suggested that I start thinking about and working on a column about, you know, sort of what it means for women in baseball. And at the time, I was like, yeah, sure, I'll do that. You know, I thought about like other people I could call, do some reporting or whatnot. He's like, no, write about what it means to you and from your perspective and from what you have seen with your experiences in the industry. And I actually didn't think that I had that strong of feelings on it necessarily. I think to exist as a woman in a very male dominated industry, you see these things, you feel these things, you recognize them, but you have to like operate with a little bit of like repression, I think. And so I started writing, and it just kind of ultimately it came out very quickly, because I think at the end of the day, this is something that I think about more than anything else in my life, maybe other than my dog. And it's, you know, one of the top things that I talk about with other women who cover baseball. And I was just really glad to see the widespread just celebration for Kim. And there were, you know, there were columns like mine or people in my situation who I understand that Kim has worked in baseball for my entire life. She's, you know, eminently qualified. She's overqualified in a way that's sort of enraging, you know, but it is still a big step for women and women of color in the industry. But then there's also just a lot of, you know, your typical baseball guys who were just like, good, this is great. You know, we know Kim to be a very capable, very skilled, very experienced baseball person, and this is right for her. And so that was what was really nice for me. But I think the thing that was really frustrating is sort of the dust sort of settled was, well, once you look at it in retrospect, the hiring just seemed so obvious. You know, I don't know that necessarily every job she interviewed for previously was the right job for her, but the resume and the, you know, sort of the accolades that were getting circulated around, I was like, wait a second, this really is a big deal, and the fact that it is so blatantly delayed.
I'm going to get to Olivia in a second, Lindsay, but one follow-up there. What was the reaction to that, to the piece that you wrote within baseball circles? And did anything surprise you? Did anything uplift you? Did anything disappoint you?
The reaction was good. I heard from, you know, a number of men. I think I imagine, you know, if I read, or when I did read other women's columns or pieces, or I imagine if I had read it, it's kind of like, well, you're kind of reading about your own experiences. There were some women who are coming up the ranks who said, you know, that they felt like it was nice to see some of these subtleties explored, but it was really a lot of men who I think about these things and are cognizant of these things. But a lot of the subtleties, I think, are just not, those are not necessarily things that float maybe beyond our circle. And so I'm hoping it was informative for people who care about these things, for people who are interested in these things. And that was what I appreciated. I just hoped that it was informative for people who were looking for that.
It was. Olivia, you wrote a piece on Kim Ng, and here's the first sentence of that piece. The Marlins general manager looks like me. I saw it with my own eyes during Kim Ng's introductory press conference. You are Korean American, and you wrote a piece about sort of representation and, you know, what her hiring means. And it was really interesting. And again, another piece that really got a lot of traction in social media, because you don't cover, like Lindsay, Olivia, Major League Baseball on an everyday basis, but Kim Ng's hiring had significance for you as a woman who works in sort of the larger sports media, sports editorial ecosystem. So I'll ask you a very similar question. Why did you decide to write this piece? Why was it important to you to write this for The Athletic?
Sure. So similar story to Lindsay's, actually. I put out a tweet when it was announced that Kim Ng would be the next GM. And one of our fellow writers at The Athletic, Tershawn Reed, reached out to me and said, hey, you should think about writing a piece about this. And like you said, I'm not a full-time writer. So I was really hesitant. I'm really rusty. But the more I sort of sat down and thought about it, I realized, sort of similar to Lindsay, that, hey, I have more thoughts about this than just what I put out in that singular tweet. So I started to put something together. Before I was at The Athletic, I worked for Masson, the Orioles and Nationals network. So I'm used to being around a clubhouse or a press box on a day-to-day basis, where you look around and, you know, you see a lot of white men on a day-to-day basis. So I felt like this moment meant so much to me personally, and that's what I hope sort of came through in the column. I'm not used to talking about myself. Clearly, you can probably tell singularly through this podcast, but also on a grander scheme, I'm definitely not super comfortable with writing a column or things like that. But it ended up being really therapeutic for me to put on paper exactly what this hiring meant to me. And I hope that in the grand scheme of things, that even if it impacted one or two other people, that it was worth it for me. It was definitely a challenge, but at the end of the day, I think I was able to hopefully show and at least prove to myself that representation is super important on a day-to-day level, but in the sport that we work in, where a lot of times we just frankly don't see it.
I'm going to get to representation in a little bit with you, Olivia, but again, I want to follow up on this too. What was the reaction to the piece that you wrote? You know, from anything positive, negative, or surprising?
Yeah, there was a little bit of negative pushback, not a lot, but I think that that's sort of what happens when you comes with column writing and me sort of inserting myself into this situation. I was really hesitant about that. And I think that the editors, our MLB editors, Emma and Casey at The Athletic, did a really great job of helping me sort of hone in on exactly what I wanted to say. But overall, it's so much positive sentiment. I was really, really grateful to see that, especially on social media. And just from a lot of fellow colleagues and other writers in the industry too, reaching out to me and thanking me for putting it together. It meant a lot. And I think it sort of shows also that there aren't maybe a lot of people who could write a column like this, just because of, you know, I am Korean American, and there aren't a lot of Korean American or Asian American journalists working in the United States in baseball. So I was really happy to see that, and just really grateful that I got a lot of nice feedback from that. It was really, really supportive, and I felt like I sort of needed it in that moment. I was a little unsure, so I'm super grateful.
Lindsay, I want to ask you about this is sort of going to come off like not the greatest question, sort of how it's phrased, but you will understand the question, and that is, how much do you feel your gender on a daily basis in baseball? How much are you sort of always either reminded or poignantly aware that you are a female in baseball circles?
It is so hard to describe this because I have tried to describe it to some women who are like casual baseball fans over the last week or week and a half. It's really hard. You know, there's times where it really feels like it doesn't matter. There are times when I feel like, honestly, being around men and conversing with mostly men throughout the day, whether it's my friends or people I cover, sort of makes it difficult for me to exist in larger female-only circles. I think the example that may help is that, like, when I started covering the Yankees and the Mets in before spring training 2018, I went out and I bought mostly like gray cotton dresses, gray sweaters, things like this, just very, very neutral clothing. And it's just, I wanted to present as neutrally as possible. And that's, it's a pipe dream. You know, I have hair that goes down to my waist. I have a very high-pitched voice. I am clearly just a woman in a baseball clubhouse. But that was something that I felt like would at least sort of take one element of, I guess, femininity off the table. But now, 2 years in, two and a half, 3 years in, I'm much more comfortable. And this spring training, I had packed a pair of white pants with butterfly prints on them. And I was like, you know what? It's a nice day in Florida. I'm just going to wear these to the clubhouse. And at this point, I am much more comfortable wearing floral clothing. I'm much more comfortable wearing butterfly pants. You know, it's just, you have these kind of like old school baseball people being like, Adler, nice pants. And it doesn't necessarily matter. But the thing is, like, there is a big instinct for me to kind of downplay some of those like traditional presentations, but also nothing I do can make it so that I am not seen as different. And I think it's good and it's bad. I feel the effects of being a woman who covers baseball when players are more open with me about some of their families, about, you know, it's very different if I say to a player, hey man, can I talk to your wife? So it's just a strange range. And I wouldn't say that it's necessarily bad or painful or fraught. I think the women who've come before me have really helped kind of lay the groundwork so that it's not so bizarre, but it is definitely an omnipresent thing and something I think about a lot.
I appreciate you answering that. You know, I can't relate to it, but it does honestly sound exhausting to have to do those calculations on a daily basis. That's not something I've ever had to do in my career.
That's how I would describe it. I would say that I don't necessarily feel that, you know, the people I cover respect me less because I'm a woman. I think at the end of the day, the people who I cover care that I am hopefully presenting an accurate and interesting look at the New York Yankees. So I don't think I am, you know, necessarily competing with the other people on my beat in that way. But I do think the job is maybe a little bit more exhausting for me in a way that's just very difficult to describe.
Olivia, I wonder if you can relate to that, because in your piece, you talked about being 18 and working for the Orioles and Nationals own broadcast network. That's MASN for those of you who are outside of Baltimore, D.C. area. And you wrote something that, you know, you sort of in your piece, you were sort of examining just your own role in this sort of environment, and, you know, how being young impacted it, how being Asian impacting it, how being a woman impacting it. Was it some combination of all of the three? And I just wonder, from your years in the business, I would guess that you must relate to what Lindsay said, even though, you know, you weren't necessarily in a baseball clubhouse every day, but you were working in sports every day.
Yeah. So I started working in the industry really young. And I think obviously when you're 18 years old and even myself now at 27, I'm very aware that I have a lot to learn about myself. And so as I sort of entered the industry, I was raised, and I addressed this in the piece, I was raised, I'm adopted. So I was raised in a really white area. So I sort of just thought that that was the way the world looked. And so when I started working in baseball, that sort of confirmed my like false idea, because everywhere I looked around, you know, it was just like white men and things like that. So as I started to grow in the industry, and I started off as an intern and sort of rose through the ranks at Masson, I started to realize that sometimes, you know, I wasn't always being taken seriously or things like that. And then I sort of had this three-headed monster looking back at me. Oh, is it because I'm young, or is it because I'm a person of color? Is it because I'm a woman? And it took me a really long time to sort of figure out that that was happening to me. And when I did, obviously it was a little jarring, and obviously sort of naive to make it that far in my life without realizing that. But I think sort of wrapping it back into Kim Ang, I'm really grateful that now people in the public eye will have the opportunity to succeed on a public level, but also to see how she handles when she might make a bad move or there's some shortcomings there. I think it's really important for people to see a well-rounded individual and a human being in such a public role.
Livia, I want to stick with you. Where does your optimism or pessimism lie when it comes to representation in the sports media, sports sort of management world, heading forward with people who look like you? You know, I am more optimistic than not, because I have faith in the generations after mine. They're far more multicultural. They look at things differently. They look at gender differently, sexuality differently, but I'm also not naive. And maybe people were saying that about the generation of the 60s, and then look what happened. So where do you stand, or where do you lie on, if we look a little bit long scale on these organizations looking more reflective of what America looks like?
I'm actually really optimistic, which is maybe I'm being naive once again, but I am. And I think that a big reason for that is, first of all, you have someone like Kim Ang in such a powerful position, but then there are also people like me, or like Lindsay in roles now, where we're available to, you know, sort of see the next generation of sports writers or sports media people coming up in the industry. And it's something that is so on the forefront of my mind, is representation and diversity and the importance of having multiple people's thoughts in a room. And so I think that as I personally and other people start to move into positions where we can hire people and sort of shape the future of the industry, I know that because those ideas are forefront in my mind, I think that we'll start to see some widespread change.
Before I finish with Lindsay on asking her a couple of baseball questions about sort of the Marlins and Kim Ang's challenges, Olivia, for my audience, who there are a lot of young people who listen, people who are in college who want to get into the industry, can you tell people what you do on a daily basis, and how one would go about trying to get that job, let's say if they were 18, 19, 20 years old right now?
Yes. So I am the social media lead at The Athletic. So I do social and digital marketing for all of our accounts. I think that I get this question a lot of how you can sort of break into the industry. I was very lucky and very aware that I didn't start at square one. I sort of had an opportunity to start as an intern really young. I would say specifically to just make sure that you're really plugged into what you want to do. So if you want to work for a certain team or things like that, make sure that you're aware of what's going on in the industry, as the sports industry and also the social media industry. And then in addition to that, I would say just make sure you're really willing to work and that you love it. That sounds silly, but I work a lot of hours. When I was in a baseball schedule, I obviously worked a ton of hours. And I think that if you aren't 100% passionate about it, don't do it. I think it sounds kind of silly to discourage people, but it is a lot of work to cover something as fun as baseball. But I would just encourage people to make sure that that's really what they want to do and then go for it. Maybe it's on a local level, interning with like a radio station or a TV network, sort of how I got my start. And then from there, I was able to have access to see and do a lot of things that some bigger writers that I admired were doing on an everyday basis.
I appreciate that. You know, once upon a time, Olivia, you know, if you were sort of handling social for The Athletic, it would have been very, very small, minimal amount of followers for all the different social media outlets. But now, you know, I feel like you're controlling basically like a small country with the amount of combined. Let's even just take Twitter, for example. The amount of Twitter followers The Athletic accounts have, and then combine them with all the writers sort of followers that we have. That's a pretty powerful social media.
Hey, don't give me a big head over here.
Picture that super soft t-shirt you love sleeping in. The one that gets softer and softer the more you wear it. Now you can bring that same lived-in softness to your entire bed with Signature Vintage Wash Sheets from Boll & Branch. This all-new collection is even softer than your favorite t-shirt, with a distinctly relaxed look and feel for your best night's sleep. Just like all Boll & Branch bedding, Signature Vintage Wash Sheets start with the highest quality, 100% organic cotton. The lived-in feel comes from a small batch washing process, creating a level of softness you've never felt before. And it's not just the feel. Boll & Branch mastered the laid-back aesthetic using a special technique that creates the well-loved look you'll find with vintage jeans. And true to the Boll & Branch hallmark, Signature Vintage Wash Sheets get softer and softer with every wash. Right now, you can get 15% off your first order with promo code ODYSSEY and save on their most relaxing sheets. So head to BollAndBranch.com today. That's B-O-L-L and Branch.com.
All right, Lindsay, we're going to finish up with baseball questions, all right? So I admit my knowledge of the Marlins is cursory. I'm not apologizing for that, by the way. But listen, they had a ridiculously good year. I mean, almost an inconceivable year, given all the things that happened with that team with COVID. They still ended up making the playoffs. They have been lambasted for some of their trades over the last couple of years since the sort of the Jeter era came in. But now, at least if you sort of look, it seems like they do have some talent in the minors. So a very, very broad question, like how challenging is this job for Kim Ng? What is the Marlins talent base? And like, was it, I'm glad she has the job, obviously, but like, is it a, can you be a successful GM, I guess, is my question of the Miami Marlins.
Well, the fact that you almost called them the Florida Marlins kind of,
I know, nice exactly catch,
how relevant they have been. I honestly think that, like, you know, I think I saw a lot of jokes and commentary like, wow, Kim Ng really likes a challenge. But like, okay, I think what people are forgetting is that the Marlins are no longer owned by Jeffrey Loria. They no longer have David Sampson in the front. You know, it's like, it's different. She very clearly has the support of Derek Jeter. It's, you know, from my point of view, like the Marlins are kind of like Yankees South. You know, they have Gary Denbo is there. I believe he's in a farm director role. A couple other people I've known throughout player development have also gone to the Marlins, and Don Mattingly seems like a wonderful manager, and he worked his ass off this year to keep that team, you know, on track through a lot of adversity. And I honestly think that this is a pretty good role for any GM. They have a good talent base. They are very clearly excited throughout the organization about what they're doing. And I think it can be really fun. I mean, I think over the course of a full season, or, you know, 140 games, if that's what it comes to next year or something like that, do I necessarily think that the Marlins will be contenders? Probably not, no, but it definitely doesn't look as far off as it used to. And I think that's a really important thing. I think it's really important that in this role, Kim clearly has the support of Jeter and the organization, and then also just knows a lot of the very established baseball people who have been there. And I think the mark of a good GM, and this is something that I see a lot covering the Yankees, is knowing how to delegate, knowing how to staff up around you. And I think she already has a good foundation for that. And it will probably be, I mean, I would think it would be a pretty attractive place for, for smart baseball people to go in the future.
Lindsay, I will say, I know that you're going to be focused on the Yankees, and the Yankees will always be good, just given the finances. But I feel like your beat is going to be so much more fun now that the Mets have Steve Cohen as an owner, because like part of the narrative of both teams is going to be like who controls back page supremacy in New York, which I think just as a Yankees beat writer, as well as a Mets beat writer, is just going to make both jobs more fun. You buy that?
Unfortunately, no. I think, Yankees fans, I think there are still a lot of Yankees fans who really love the George Steinbrenner years. The like, it's something I think about a lot is how like George kind of accidentally turned that fan base into thinking that players should just be paid what they're worth. You know, I get a lot of people saying just like, just pay for whoever it takes. And I think Steve Cohen comes in here and he's in a really advantageous position because he didn't lose money last season like everyone else. If he comes in, he just starts spending, he starts building a team. My Twitter mentions, my story comments, my Instagram message requests are just going to be like, why aren't the Yankees spending? Why aren't the Yankees in on this guy? Why aren't this? I think it's definitely going to be really interesting because, yeah, for however long, we just haven't seen the Mets operating like the Yankees do. And I think a lot of Yankees fans feel like through the way that the Yankees build their roster now, which from my point of view has a lot of merit, but I'm not a fan. I think a lot of fans see it as kind of decidedly un-Yankee-like right now. And so if Steve Cohen comes in and starts running the Mets in the way that Yankees fans think the Yankees should be run, I mean, it's going to be kind of funny and kind of a train wreck. That's kind of what I see coming down the line.
Get that Lindor column ready when the Mets get him.
No. All right. Yeah, I can't.
Lindsay Adler covers the Yankees for The Athletic, writes some fantastic stuff. Follow her on Twitter if you're a Yankees fan or if you're a baseball fan. And as I mentioned, Olivia Withwright is social media lead for The Athletic. And just independently of her coming on this podcast and me working with her, The Athletic social media is really, really good. She is talented as shit. She knows what she's doing. Lindsay, Olivia, thank you so much for joining me today on the Sports Media Podcast, and I'm sure we'll talk in the future.
Have a good one.
All right, back in the studio, my thanks to Ryan, Lindsay, and Olivia for popping on the podcast and for their time and conversation. If you like this kind of stuff, head to the archives, check out what we have. Prior podcast to this was Muffet McGraw, the Hall of Fame basketball coach from Notre Dame, who's now an ACC network broadcaster, and Grant Wall, and one of the preeminent soccer journalists in this country. Before that, James Andrew Miller on the ESPN layoffs. Before that, Chris Fowler on calling college football this year. Jordan Cornette and Shea Pepler Cornette being a married couple doing radio for ESPN. Head to the archives. Check out the things you like. Please, if you do like this, leave us a 5-star review and a nice note on iTunes or Stitcher or wherever you listen to this stuff. All that stuff helps for sure. All right, again, I want to thank everybody at Cadence 13, from Chris Corcoran to Spencer Brown to John McDermott. Obviously, thanks to Patrick and Sean. And we will see you soon on the Sports Media Podcast.
I'm Mark Chapman. Welcome to the Planet Premier League podcast. The Each week, Cesc Fabregas, Nader Manua and myself talk all things Premier League.
As a player, you don't have time to talk.
No.
You don't have time to make a plan. You just need to deal with wave after wave after wave.
We watched Coach Carter and he said, oh, afterwards, the game's just about doing this for your teammates. And I remember looking around halfway through the film and half the squad was asleep.
Planet Premier League. Listen wherever you get your podcasts.